This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm going to need caller 9 right now at 800-636-1067. You have won 2 tickets to the Washington Nationals opening day, Thursday, March 27th versus Philly. First 20,000 fans get an opening day t-shirt for the complete national schedule and tickets. Visit thefandc.com. Every afternoon, we do the thing. It's called the Beltway Blitz. But I want to wish you all good dialing and good luck. Chance to win those tickets right now, obviously. And then tomorrow morning at 8 with the Junks, noon with JP and B-Mitch. And lastly, tomorrow at 4 p.m. with us. Let's start a little Beltway Blitz. What's going on in D.C. sports on the local hardwood, please, Darius? Armel Gene Wong in the Washington Post, talking Terps, talking Tourney with us here. Gene, Maryland tips off tomorrow, I believe, in the afternoon. Break down that matchup for us against the Grand Canyon team. There are probably not a lot of folks here out east know much about.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be an easy game. None of these games are in the tournament, usually in the first round, unless maybe you're a one seed. But, yeah, Grand Canyon's coached by Bryce Drew. We all remember him hitting a miraculous shot to beat Ole Miss on, 30 years ago during Valparaiso's run to the Sweet 16. So he knows about March. He knows what it takes to win in March. He knows about being the underdog. So I'm sure Grand Canyon is going to be well prepared. But the Terps always say it's about them, not about the opponent necessarily. So if Maryland plays like they have been, can expect them to win. The one Achilles for them, as we know, it's been close games, one possession games down to the wire. They've lost the last 4 of those, so they really need to get that corrected going into the NCAA tournament.
Any concern with the travel, having to go all the way out to Seattle, and how do they combat that? Do they go out there Monday or Tuesday?
Kevin Willard said this the other day, and he's on point, that one thing about being in the Big Ten, you travel everywhere with the addition of the West Coast teams. They've played in Seattle. They've played at Washington. They know the travel schedule. They know the routine. They know the hotel they want to stay in. It's down to, where they're going to eat. I mean, everything has kind of become a routine now. So one of the ancillary benefits of joining the Big Ten is that travel, especially in this case when they're in Seattle where they've already been this season.
Gene, probably a longer philosophical discussion than our abbreviated format here on the Beltway Blitz. But what should Maryland be? In other words, this is my anecdotal feeling. Half the fan base, and these won't add up to 100%, but half the fan base thinks they should be a Final Four team every year, which is delusional. And the other half of the fan base is I'm so happy that, I don't know why they're from the Midwest, but I'm so happy we just made the tournament, and it's fun. It should be somewhere in between. I don't know where that somewhere is. Yeah.
The somewhere is you should expect Sweet 16 every season. That's fair, I think. Catch lightning in a bottle. Every now and then with Gary and you have a chance of winning the national championship. I think that's fair to expect. It's fair not to expect them to flame out in the first round of the NCAA tournament every year, to be competitive in the Big Ten every year, to have a chance to win that conference. This year they finished second. Last year was an anomaly. They were 16-17. Kevin Willard retooled the roster. We saw what happened. They hit on every guy in the portal. And that's kind of what basketball is now. It's a year-to-year thing. But I think it's fair for Maryland fans to expect them to be a Sweet 16 team every year. And if they get on a hot streak, maybe have a Final Four run.
Is there a singular player that you think is the X factor, or is the beauty of Maryland that they've got that starting five that's really good and they kind of all rely on each other?
I will tell you that I think Jordan Geronimo, their first guy off the bench, can be an X factor because their bench had not been doing great until the Big Ten tournament, and Jordan Geronimo scored 11 points. And Tafar Gapare, who was healthy at the beginning of the year, missed about 2 weeks with an illness, lost 15 pounds, is now back to full strength. So those two guys off the bench could really be X factors because you don't really expect Maryland's bench to contribute a ton.
Gene, elsewhere, it's got a big picture in this bracket. Houston, unbelievably impressive. I mean, it's a 116 matchup, but it just it looks like a Calvin Sampson team. Like seven guys that are all incredibly muscular between 6'4 and 6'10, jumping over everything in their way. Just relentless, physical, and incredible. They look great, but Auburn a little bit shaky there in the first half, ultimately up 10. These one seeds are interesting to me this year. I feel like the top half of college basketball, not top half, but top group, separated from the rest, but there's some vulnerability there. Maybe just give me your thoughts.
No, there is, because we say to Auburn, they stumbled down the stretch, right? Stumbled, I use it very loosely. Someone asked Bruce Pearl, are they panicking? He's like, yeah, we're panicking. We lost to Tennessee, Florida, Alabama. We're panicking. I mean, you know, the SEC is a grind, okay? Auburn's still going to be Auburn. Houston reminds me a lot of Michigan State. Like, they're never going to overwhelm you offensively, but I think they're number one in KenPom in defensive efficiency. They will choke the living life out of you, and they can dictate that pace, so that's why they're so dangerous.
How far do you have Maryland going?
I think I was Sweet 16 for at least, and if they are shooting the three, if they can hit from the outside, I firmly believe it's a Final Four level team with those five starters. You ask any coach in the country to compare Maryland starters to theirs, they'll tell you Maryland's starting five is as good as any in the country. That includes Alabama. That includes Florida. And I think Florida's probably going to win the whole thing. And I'm not alone in that. But the starting five-wise, I would put Maryland head-to-head with any of those programs.
Does it feel like the Big Ten is due for a huge tourney here? I can't remember what they all run together for me, Gene, but it felt like there was a year where they had like 14 teams and none of them made out of the opening weekend or something like that,
well,
right?
I will tell you that I have Michigan State advancing deep too, because this is a problem they have only in Lansing. The fans are on Izzo for not having made the Final Four since 2019. What a bad program, right? They haven't been in the Final Four in 5 years. God forbid, right? God forbid. So, and Izzo, really, the players have a chip on their shoulders. They have experience. They have Jace Richardson, one of the best freshmen in the country. So, yeah, we know Maryland. We saw what Michigan did in the Big Ten tournament. So they got a lot of programs that could go far in this NCAA tournament.
Gene, have a safe trip out to Seattle. Great coverage as always.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
See you, buddy.
Let's talk some Caps, Darius. Joining us now from the Associated Press is Stephen Wino to talk about those Capitals. Give us a preview of the game tonight against the Flyers.
Well, Charlie Lindgren starts for the Capitals tonight. Alex Ovechkin goes away from breaking Wayne Gretzky's record. And Capitals have won seven of their last eight games. They have a chance to be the first team in the NHL to clinch a playoff spot this season. They were the last team to clinch a playoff spot last year. They got in their game 82 on that TJ Oshie empty net goal. That would be the first time since 1980 that a team was the last to clinch a previous season becomes the first to clinch. But the Philadelphia Flyers are in town. They've been in the tank really for the last couple of months, especially since the trade deadline. And I think it's going to be a juiced up crowd tonight.
Good nugget by Swano there about 1980. I mean, that's not that recent history. Oh wait, it's 45 years. Swano, this is a relative complaint because, as you said, I think what do they want? Seven of their last eight. It feels like they're still not playing their best hockey for 60 minutes. It feels like if they're in a close game, they're going to turn on and win. See the other night, 1-1 deep into the third against Detroit, until it wasn't. They went 4-1 going away. But it feels like they haven't played their best Capitals hockey consistently just yet, and they're still in such a great place. It both speaks to them how good they are, but also you kind of go, I'd love for you to be playing your best hockey when it comes to postseason time.
Yeah, Danny, and I think that's part of the issue is it's hard to fake urgency. Like when you're facing a team like the Red Wings, like the Rangers or the Canadiens who are in playoff chases and need these wins, need these points in the standings, it's hard to fake that. And the Capitals have such a cushion atop the Metropolitan Division, atop the Eastern Conference, that what's motivating them right now is this Alex Ovechkin record chase. And clearly they want to get into the playoffs and they want home ice advantage and all those things. But they have had such a big lead for so long that you can allow bad habits to sort of creep into your game, and you're not going to do that. The question is really, can they sort of build that game up over the next 3.5 weeks until the playoffs start, to where it doesn't matter if you're peaking now. You want to be peaking when the playoffs start.
Yeah, I mean, how do they do that? Is that something that Coach Carbs is kind of preaching to them in the dressing room, and they just kind of got to go out there and do that? Are they going to rest some guys? Are they going to find some ways to do it? Like you said, it's kind of hard to fake that urgency, and they just, frankly, are not going to have a lot of that down the stretch because they're so far ahead.
Yeah, and I think that's where Spencer Carberry is going to earn the Jack Adams Award as Coach of the Year. He's always been good at sort of pushing the right buttons with this team from the time he took over before last season, of sort of adjusting their game along the way. And it's sort of keeping that carrot out there for them. Okay, this is when you do, first of all, you get in the playoffs. You're trying to get Alex Ovechkin this goal record before the end of the regular season. You'd really love to win the division. You really love to get home ice in the Eastern Conference, and just sort of almost like build building blocks along the way of, let's treat this as a four game segment. Let's sort of split up the season into achievable goals, and hope that with that you're able to kind of get yourself into a mode, because there's a lot of teams who are playing down the stretch who are not in a playoff position, not in a playoff race. And Barrichotto always used to say you kind of like playing teams in it because you know what kind of structure and stuff you're going to get. Instead, you get sort of recklessness and unpredictability. What the Capitals need to make sure they do is build some predictability in their game.
So I know last year they had one guy score north of 30 goals. It was Ovechkin with his renaissance second half. Tom Wilson has already done it. Alexei Podolyak is about to do it. And, of course, you add in Ovechkin to that group. What a turnaround offensively. It's not a huge, 7 or 8, 9 or 10 new pivotal players. Obviously, they added in free agency. But to me, this is such a remarkable turnaround offensively year over year. What do we attribute that to?
Yeah, well, I think it's a lot of guys having career years all at the same time. And there's a little bit of luck that goes into that. But it is Spencer Carberry and sort of having this team playing the right way. And you take a combination of that, and they're getting good enough goaltending where they're not slumping their shoulders and figuring, oh, we need to win games 2-1. They can win games 4-2, 5-3, that sort of thing, because they have the sort of scoring potential to it. But there's more talent. There's more talent on the roster than last year. And when you have all that talent, you've got guys slotted in the lineup where opponents have to figure out who do you defend, who do you try to stop. And it's not just having to stop Alex Ovechkin. It's now you've got to worry about Pierre-Luc Dubois. You've got to worry about Alexi Prunas. All up and down the line. Connor McMichael was the Caps' best player, arguably, for the first month and a half of the season. That they've got so many different sort of secondary scoring options that it really throws the opponents off.
Steven, appreciate the time, man. Always good to talk.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
See you, brother.
Let's talk a little Commanders, Darius. Joining us to talk Commanders is a guy who's sitting courtside at a NCAA tournament game, VCU-BYU.
I love it.
It is Michael Phillips. Mike, what's going on, man?
Hey, 8-6 right now. VCU up its first media timeout. We're out in Denver, Mile High City, I believe they call it. Just dropping a little local knowledge on you fellas.
I love that. Did they do the thing where they warn you about the altitude 7 billion times?
They did something better at the press conference yesterday. I swear every single reporter in the greater Denver area was there, and every question they asked was some variation of, like, obviously you've never been this high before. What are you going to do about it tomorrow? And I thought they had a good answer, and the answer was, we're going to play basketball. But they didn't seem to like that answer.
That's pretty good. Real quick, we'll get into the Commanders in a second. How far does VCU go in the tournament?
Well, a lot of people are picking the winner of this game to upset Wisconsin in the next one. This is a 50-50 game. BYU likes to run. They want to win 90-89. VCU likes to play defense, make a little bit of a rock fight, maybe win 60-59. So we're going to see a couple teams try to impose some pace here over the next couple hours. Very good basketball team at VCU. You guys know the reputation. They haven't won a tournament game since 2016. Looking to break a little bit of a slump here today.
Yeah, how about that? I want to get a couple more courtside. As soon as it comes back from commercial break, I'm going to have you stand up and wave awkwardly, see if we can see you on TV.
I'm on the left side, lower left corner as you're watching.
All right. So it's still – okay, here we go. We're back. I'm looking at Dana Jacobson doing a story. Looks like she's doing a story about tater tots. How close to her are you? Can you see her?
As VCU is attempting to score – You'll see me at the bottom of your screen. I'm going to hold up my blue Powerade cup for a second here. See if you can grab it.
We're doing one shots on people.
I love this.
All right, hold on. Play's about to start. Ball's inbounding now. Where are you? Blue cup. Wave it.
I'm trying to see. I can't see.
This may stun you. We are a touch ahead of live action here than you guys are on TV.
No, I know, but there's.
Oh, I think I see a cup. No, I think I saw a cup.
There's a score bug in the way. Could you?
I think I saw a cup in the.
Well, I think that's him. That's him. That's him. That was him. That was him. Okay.
We spotted you.
Okay, we got it.
We got you.
All right. now that that's over, Michael, Washington signed Michael Gallup, and my initial reaction was, all right, guys, throw out the rundown. We got to lead the show with it. This is Michael Gallup. He went for 1,100 yards as Dallas's number two, and Toby, who I'm doing the show with today, obviously, is like, dude, he was out of football last year. And I'm like, wait, what? And I had to, like, obviously, like, take a second to process it. He didn't have that many yards combined over the last 3 years that he was playing, basically. This is not the marquee signing maybe that I thought it was. How do you see him fitting in, if at all?
Yeah, the highlight reel's good, but the recent production is lacking. But this is, you keep in mind, this isn't just about getting stars or building for Jaden Daniels. This is also about a team that lost a lot of guys to free agency this year and is still in a lot of ways purging the Ron Rivera era, right? They're still, you know, turning over this whole 53-man roster. And so, you know, they're going to need to make depth signings, you know, signings that maybe give them the opportunity to see if guys still have it late in their career. Certainly Austin Ekeler was a great example of that last year, a signing that in the moment everybody's like, ah, he's done. You know, Zach Ertz to an extent, but I think people respected the veteran savvy there, so to speak. But yeah, with Gallup, if you get something, great. If you don't get something, you move on. But they need to fill probably 30 to 40 roster spots between now and training camp. So they're not all going to be marquee guys.
We were kind of kicking this around a little bit earlier in the show. How do you feel like what they've done so far is compared to the expectations you had going into the offseason? It sounded like Danny had a little bit lower expectations than I did, so he's kind of happy with what they've done, and I had maybe a little bit higher expectations, and not, you know, underwhelmed, but a little bit whelmed on what they've done. Where would you land on that?
I'm feel good with what was available and what they did with what was available. I think in a perfect world, would have been a stronger free agent class, would have been more out there. I think also, you look, they've traded some draft picks away, which really surprised me given how much Adam Peters loves the draft. But everything you're hearing is that this is an underwhelming draft class. And so I think in a lot of ways they got lucky to have the number two pick when they did. If they had it this year, probably wouldn't be as transformational for the franchise. They've got lucky to have the opportunities they did last year. But this year, I think everybody's navigating a market where there just aren't a lot of big names out there to get, and so it's tough for me to deduct points if they don't make the signings that aren't available to them, if that makes sense.
It does. Michael, back to a VCU-related thing. I actually don't know the answer to this, and I figured nobody better than you to at courtside at a VCU game to pick the brain up. How do VCU fans feel about Will Wade?
Yeah, so they don't like him. He's the only one. He's the only one in the sequence of former coaches who they straight up don't like. Refer to him as the snake sometimes. He is unquestionably, and I got to know him pretty well, he is unquestionably a brilliant basketball mind. He is unquestionably a winner. He's up, what, 31-13 right now on Clemson.
They are spanking Clemson.
You better be ready for the rest of the show, too.
Yeah, it is quite a show. Michael, always good to chat. Go Rams.
All right, take care, guys.
Enjoy, buddy. That is an outstanding job there, by the way.
That's awesome.
Okay, I think we saw him, right, because he was kind of half standing.
Yeah.
Everyone else, because he was in the media row, everybody else was not standing, and he kind of stood up and made it awkward and waved his cup.
Yeah.
And I think if he could just – you probably can't hear me anymore, Michael, but if you could turn around and wave, that would be very kind.
Just hold up a sign, hi, Danny, hi, Toby, Danny. Yeah, whatever it is.
Whatever, yeah, exactly right. That's funny. Appreciate all those guys. That's how we Beltway Blitz, people. Coming up next. The NFL's proposing some rule changes, or some teams are proposing the NFL more directly and accurately. We're going to go through some of those proposals, ones we like, ones we don't like, and then we'll talk about some rules that just simply have to change. We'll do that next here on The Fan. That's how it goes sometimes, Tubbs, with this whole NCAA tournament thing. Alabama State in the first half was, I think, within two maybe, of Auburn. You blink, they're down 18.
Mm-hmm.
Hoping, you know, I mean, the run was going to end sometime, but it looks like it might be here this afternoon against the number one team in the land, the Auburn Tigers. Welcome back to the show. It's GD here on The Fan. No GP, but yes to Tobes. He is hanging out with us. We'll be here tomorrow as well. Tap Sports Bar. Quite simply, I love this place. The menu item in question, a couple people were asking me, what was that? So what happened was I saw somebody go by with a dish that looked incredible. And Toby was talking, and I stopped doing my job and started looking at the dish, trying to figure out what it was. I awkwardly pretended I was looking for something when I walked to the other side of the restaurant.
Sure.
By people that were eating the dish, figured out what it was. Looking for loaded fries. Loaded fries. So then what I did was I ordered loaded fries, and I shared them with absolutely no one and destroyed them by myself.
They looked good, I'll tell you that much.
They were good, and I know I did a quality control assessment. I tested every single one. No lacking quality in any of them. So each fry was very, very good. I know that because I had them all. I didn't outsource that to anyone else but yours truly. I want to remind you guys that this program right here, brought to you by our friends at Condori and Morod, the exclusive sponsor of our show. They can help you draft your last will and testament, set up a living trust, put together a medical power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. Tournament action hot and heavy as we're going. VCU up to midway through the first half against BYU. That's going to be a really competitive game as we go. A couple other games are, at halftime we're moving around. But this is just the best, man. It's wall-to-wall. There's never a moment where there's not something riveting or super exciting to be able to watch.
Yeah, it'd be a little bit better if Clemson wasn't just getting spanked by McNeese.
I didn't want to bring that up.
My bracket's already in shambles. But, yeah, it's always great action, always a lot of fun. This VCU-BYU game I think is going to be really, really fun to keep an eye on. So, and like you said, it's crazy when sometimes these teams, it seems like they're always able to stick around for a little bit. But when you get those one seeds, those real blue bloods, they can just hit a gear that other teams can't, and Auburn kind of hit that. Now they're up by 18, probably going to run away with this one.
Yeah, it looks to be the case, right? And as you mentioned, McNeese State, with a strange situation, Will Wade's the coach, I just asked Michael Phillips on the Beltway Blitz about him. He was at VCU for exactly 2 years, went to LSU.
I forgot about that,
by the way. Yeah, was there for 2 years. Then used it, as a lot of VCU coaches have. It's kind of the curse of that mid-major.
Sure.
Right? You do well there, you become a hot commodity. And it's a lot of times a stepping stone. No disrespect to VCU. That's a really good program. And they've done an outstanding job even with Shaka Smart through multiple coaches they've had over the years. But it was, the curse that I saw it firsthand at GW. Mike Jarvis was the coach my first couple years there. And he got a better deal for a lot more money and moved. I get that. That happens, right? So Will Wade was at LSU. And it wasn't just a firing or a falling out. There was some shenanigans. Oh, there was some cheating.
To say the least.
There was some impropriety. And it was, as my old baseball coach used to say, it was not good. It was not good. And it used to be, back in my day, Tobes, I remember this with a Todd Bozeman, for example, who was the head coach at Cal for so many years. There, when he committed impropriety, you had to have what was called a show cause if you wanted to hire him. Meaning, if you wanted to hire the guy, you were allowed to. But you have to show cause as to why it was the only possible thing that you could do. Basically making it a de facto death sentence for a coach until
sure.
That show cause thing was lifted. And so he got in trouble and is like right back there at McNeese. And they're nasty. They've been in the tournament a couple straight years. He's already got a new job. It's not like lined up and it's secret. It's been announced. He's going to NC State. I just feel like the whole thing is awkward. I don't think anyone's done anything wrong specifically. It just feels different, man. And I know it's what the old guy's like. Back in my day, it was this. Well, back in my day, it was this, and it wasn't this, and I'm not used to it. That's the only point there. No other complaint. Again, I don't think any one person is bad here.
No, I mean, it's just weird. I mean, he was talking.
It's just weird, right?
Yeah, in his press conference, they're like, have you talked to NC State or another school? And he goes, yes.
Yes.
The fact that you're just answering yes, and he's like, well, our players are open if they're going to transfer, too. They're talking to other schools
right.
And whatnot. It's like, it's just a weird time in college
yeah.
sports where, essentially, you better enjoy your team this year because it's going to be totally different next year.
Have you picked out your office furniture? Yes. Have you decided what color the paint's going to be? Yes. Have you decided the nameplate's going to be taped on or it's going to be one of those nameplates on the side of the door? Yes.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what players you're getting? Yes. Like, he's already 1 foot out the door.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're going to join the ACC team that they're playing right now, Clemson. And they are woodshedding Clemson up by 20-something.
Oh, just smacking them. He can coach, man.
Yes, he can
coach.
That is a smart basketball mind. I promised this, so let's do it now. The NFL is amazing at this. We chatted about this yesterday. They didn't actually talk about the rule changes potentially. But when they sense there's momentum for something that's not the NFL, they'll just throw something out there to let everybody know, oh, by the way.
We're still here.
If we sneeze, you're going to cover it. Via Tom Pelissero. multiple teams suggested, as they do in advance of rules committee and league meetings and stuff, some ideas for changes, okay? So there are three big ones that I wanted to go through and kind of get reactions to real time here, right, Tobes? First one, Eagles proposal. I automatically hate it, just for the record.
Naturally, yes.
It's actually a good one. Eagles, apply the current postseason overtime rules to regular season games.
Yes.
So, no matter what, both teams will possess the ball, and we use overtime to do it. So, I'm trying to figure out exactly what's different. It's because they've changed the rules so many times over the years. So what's the biggest difference between regular season and postseason overtime?
Putting it's just
on the spot here.
Touchdown, right? Like, if you score a touchdown, you still win.
And in the postseason, both teams possess the ball.
Yeah, no matter what.
No matter what?
Yeah, and the one thing I'll say on this is, can you please at least go back to 15 minutes in the overtime? Because if you end up like this, Danny, where both teams get it, so the Commanders are playing the Eagles, right? Commanders go down and score a touchdown. Philly gets a chance now. They go down and score a touchdown. Well, in a 10-minute period, if both teams have 4 or 5-minute drives, suddenly Washington is going to get the ball back with 30 seconds left. They got no time left. They just take a knee. They go. They settle for a tie. Can we go back to the 15 minutes? Give us a full allotment of time. But I agree. I think you need to allow both teams to have a chance at the ball. It shouldn't matter. The coin toss shouldn't decide it, because sometimes there's just a team rolling, and I understand that the hard guy's like, you just stop them. Like, well, okay, I get your point. But I would like the go back to the 15 minutes and implement that. I think it makes a lot of sense.
And it's close to the thing that I've always wanted, that everybody always just says, well, you can't do that. And nobody gives me a great reason. It's something about, like, injuries or guys are too tired or something. I don't know. I mean, it's...
But let's add an 18th game. I'm sure that'll be the problem.
Yeah,
that'll fix it.
But, the same people that say you can't do it my way want an 18th game. I've always believed it's the weirdest thing that nobody else seems to want to propose this or is interested in it. Just play football.
Yeah.
Just continue the game with an extra quarter, with no gimmick, with nothing different, and you just play. And there's a great chance it resolves itself. In the event that it doesn't, if you want to shorten that to 10 minutes, that's fine by me. Then we can do your sudden death or your college rule or whatever. Grant loves the college rule. He wants the ball at the 25 or the 20 or like the 7 or the 29 or I don't care, or whatever. And he wants to go back and forth and have records be meaningless. I don't want that. I think you should play football with no gimmicks. But one day we'll get close to that. So that's that rule. This rule right here is my favorite rule proposal, but it's not going to get the most attention. But I wanted to give it some due attention right now. The Lions submitted a proposal to eliminate automatic first downs for defensive holding and illegal contact. Yes. This rule to me has never, ever, ever made sense. Some rules, some things that happen, they go, well, it's an automatic first down. It doesn't matter if it's 3rd and 23. It doesn't matter if it's 4th and 40.
Yeah.
If somebody touches someone after 5 yards, by letter of the law, automatic first down. The point back in the day when this rule was written is there weren't that many big plays. It was, you know, someone would zip through the line and break a tackle and run, John Riggins and Super Bowl style. So the assumption was you'd get enough for a first down. Well, times have changed. Why are we assuming somebody would have gotten 25 yards? Now, if it's 3rd and 7, you're going to be incentivized to grab somebody rather than giving up that first down catch and make it 3rd and 2. I understand that. So what I would do along these lines, and I'll tag you in, is if you'd like to make them more significant penalties, if you want to make defensive holding 10 yards, fine by me. You want to make illegal contact 10 yards, fine by me. The automatic first down is insane to me. I understand there are plenty of penalties where it's not an automatic first down, where they go, yeah, if the yardage is good enough, you get the first down. If it's not, we still need to play some football. Assigning the offense the benefit of the doubt of 5, 10, 15, 20, in some cases 25 yards on a play, when those happen, what, once or twice a week?
Yeah.
Has always been insane to me. But the responses right away are, well, get ready for some purposeful holding. Okay. You know what I mean? Why isn't that an emergency to people that someone got a first down on a 3rd and 20 because someone did something 5 yards?
I think you're right, though. If you make it a 10-yard penalty, maybe it's a little bit different and you don't get the automatic first down because, you know, immediately the reason that I think you have the rule, it's 3rd and 25. I'm not in the good spot. I just immediately start grabbing guys, right? And I don't want to. If you do a 10-yard penalty, maybe you're less likely to do that. But remember, there was a couple years ago, They've since instituted something kind of disallowing this, and I forget exactly the letter of the law, but the Ravens did this, where it was a couple seconds left in the game, and this was an offense, but they took the snap, and then they just held everybody and ran the clock out.
Yep.
Like, clearly bending the rules a little bit, finding that gray area. You worry that, like, if someone's at the end of the game, there's, like, 20 seconds left, and they're just trying to kill a little clock, and all of a sudden, just wrap up your receiver. I understand those sorts of things. So I think if you made it 10 yards, to your point, you can get rid of some of that, because 10 yards is nothing to slouch at. 5 yards I'll live with, whatever, but if I'm giving you 10 yards, chances are you're going to get your first down anyways. If it's 3rd and 7, like you said, if you're 3rd and 25, okay, well, now it's a more manageable 3rd and 15. So I think that makes some sense. I would be in favor of getting rid of it because there's too many ticky-tack things that result in automatic first downs that just seemingly affect games all too often.
And the big one, this is going to get all the media attention because people can't help themselves. The Packers took the bullet for all of us and said we should eliminate the tush push.
Yes, yes,
now, they
yes.
didn't do what I would do, okay, on this front, which is nobody can push a ball carrier when you're on offense. But this one was specific to the tush push. To prohibit an offensive player from pushing a teammate who was lined up directly behind the snapper and receives the snap immediately after the snap. So I don't know what immediately means. Like, if Jalen Hurts waits a 1/1000, then could you push him? If you had Zach for Washington, Zach Ertz takes the snap, or Logan Thomas did a couple years ago as a tight end, can you wait 2 seconds to do it or whatever? What about anyway? To me, it's very simple. Nobody should be able to push a runner from behind on offense, and you got the whole thing solved. But that's the one that's going to get the most attention because it's Philadelphia, because they were successful, and people can't separate that success from the real arguments. It just sounds like, you know, Jimmy from South Jersey, you know, I'm going to be upset because they can't stop it. You know, you can't stop the vertically shove. So, you know, they're just jealous. They're haters, old idiots. So, whatever. I can easily do that. It's not a football play. It's annoying. It shouldn't be in the game at all. Quarterback sneaks are wildly effective, by the way.
Correct.
Quarterback sneaks are an 80-plus percent play over the last decade. So, this is better than that. But your quarterback sneak, it's not taking away the right to get a 3rd and 1. It's not taking away short yardage decision-making or the ability to get it. It's just the one way where it's frankly not a football play and everybody's lined up weird and doesn't look right. It's stupid. Get rid of it altogether. But let's see what folks think. 800-636-1067. Number one, the brotherly shove, the tush push, the nonsense. In or out on it, you want to get gotten rid of, as Green Bay does. And in addition, hot and fresh out the kitchen, what rule in the National Football League simply has to change? You get to be commissioner for, I don't know, next like 10, 15 minutes or so. What's got to get fixed? What are you doing? 800-636-1067. G&D here on the Fan Live. Tap Sports Bar, MGM National Darber. As the Sugar Hill Gang plays you back in, sorry about it. Gonzaga's up 15-2 on Georgia. Georgia is, I think, now aware that the game itself has started. BYU's up 29-26 on VCU, the battle of the blank-blank U's right there. Getting after you, and Auburn is now pulling away up by 20 on Alabama State. Talking NFL rule changes here at 800-636-1067 is the phone number. Tobes and me are hanging out. Two things I want to know from you. In or out on the tush push. You don't have to give an explanation. Just say in or out. And second, the rule that needs changing. The rule that needs fixing. Right? That you can't believe people accept it. I've given you mine. Just happens to be the one that the Detroit Lions proposed, Tobes. I am so out on the automatic first down, no matter what. If you have enough yardage for a first down, that's fine. I'm willing to hear a lot of things. Like, you want to have a pass interference type deal where it's a spot foul. Where you, I would have gotten 15 yards, 17 yards, whatever. I can even live with that. The idea that a 5-yard penalty automatically guarantees your first down, I think, is insane. But that's a rule that I don't know that it's going to pass, but I hope it does. Let's go to the callers. 800-636-1067. I'll start line one, Patrick and Orange, in or out on the tush push and rule that needs changing.
I think the tush push needs to go. And the rule that
I think needs to stay, actually, is the defensive holding. I think whenever a defender is out of phase, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's a corner. And they're doing this, and it takes away the receiver's ability to actually make a play on the ball. I think it's ideal that you punish them for not being in position, being out of phase. And I watched it happen multiple times. It might be a bad deal, but to actually play the game the right way rather than to just hold. That's all I got.
Patrick, thank you, buddy. Your phone was breaking up there. Otherwise, I would ask you some questions. How many yards does that entitle you to? I don't disagree with any point you make philosophically. How many? I ask you rhetorically, Toes, but how many yards does that entitle an offense to?
It's so tough because you're right, Danny. Like, it's something that giving an automatic first down is such a steep penalty that seemingly you never get that sort of penalty on offense, right? You don't loss it down penalties really isn't loss it down. Like, you threw an incomplete pass on a intentional grounding or something like that. It's not like you lose the yardage. It's kind of just what it is. But, like, there doesn't seem to be an equal penalty on offense where if you're 3 yards down the field and you're grabbing a guy and you're holding him, you're going to get that penalty versus you could end up holding a guy for, like, a 15-yard gain. And maybe, like you said, maybe a spot foul makes more sense. It's just so difficult because it's such a steep penalty to give a team, and it's such a back-breaking penalty to give a team an automatic first down. So I don't know. Like, I think if you were to go to 10 yards and take away the first down, I think that might be the way to solve it, like you brought up earlier.
And again, I'm willing to listen to any idea under the sun. You know, like, if you've got an idea for a spot foul or 10 yards or 12 yards, whatever you want to do is fine by me. But the idea, I keep going back to the same thing. I know it's not the most commonplace scenario, but it is one. I can't remember which opponent it was for Washington this year. I feel like it was Philadelphia, but I can't swear to it. They gave up a first down on a 3rd and 18 because of an illegal contact, holding, whatever you want to call it, penalty. In no way does that entitle an offense to 18 yards worth of offense. They deserve something. I'm very in favor of them saying the idea saying you prohibited them from making a play, so you deserve to be punished for that, by all means. How in the world is that 18 yards?
And it's so difficult because you don't want to throw more on the referee's plates. The less that a ref has to do, the better. Like, the judgment calls, like, give them black and white. I'm all for that because it just makes it easier. But it's almost one of those things, Danny, where a little grab on the jersey that is kind of minor. Remember, it used to be a 5-yard or 15-yard penalty depending upon what you got on the face mask.
Yeah.
Then they changed it to always be 15. Almost something like that where if it's just like a little egregious, like, or a little bit, like, I just grabbed your jersey, tugged it a little bit. Like, it's a hold, but it's not that bad, then whatever. But if you're, like, hugging a dude trying to get out of a route, then maybe that gives them the automatic first down. But, again, that's throwing more judgment on their plate. Frankly, I don't think any of us want that. More stuff on the referee's plate.
So, yeah, nobody's into that.
It's such a difficult rule to fix. I think you're onto something with the 10 yards and no first down, but I don't know that I see that going anywhere anytime soon either.
And I also don't know that it's going to result necessarily in a bunch of automatic holds or people saying, I've got to start holding now because I'm going to give stuff up. I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't know how realistic that is, but just a thought. 800-636-1067. AJ, La Plata, are you in or out on the brotherly shove, and what rules got to change?
Push Tush out, and the other rule to change is the kickoff. But bring it back the way it used to be. If it goes in the end zone, put it on the 20. 25 is okay. But the way it is now, one play and you're over the 50.
Yeah.
Thank you, dude. Appreciate it. That one, I don't think you're going to see change, Tubbs.
No, and I got to be careful how loud I say this because Brian Mitchell is sitting to our right.
Uh-oh.
I don't really care if the kickoff's a part of the game or not. I really don't. I'm not saying take it out.
Ooh.
But if you took it back to the normal when they kicked it out of the back of the end zone every time, Danny, I know so many people looked at that and said, oh, we need to make it interesting. I don't care, man. Like, if they want to kick it out of the back of the end zone every time, so be it. Do whatever you like. I think the new kickoff is so stupid. I could not stand it all year. And so if they were to go back to the old and suddenly you go back to whatever the stupid number was, 90% touchback percentage, I don't care. I really don't care.
So the only thing that I cared about, so the opposite end of that, is I just want returns. I want the kick, even though it obviously burned Washington when Kamonte Turpin took one to the house and lost that game to Dallas. I want the kick to go to a returner, and I want kick returns. it's just like my views on baseball over the years. As an old guy, older guy now, who grew up loving the game, I can't believe that everyone's like, yeah, it's totally fine that guys have a choreographed dance every time they hit a single. Like, I can't believe we're going to do, like, the Macarena when I hit a sack fly. I think it's ridiculous. I think the pimping and the screaming of home runs or strikeouts is absurd. I think it's showing people up and down the lineup, and I hate it. But I understand. The times change. The game moves. If you'd asked me, do you want a DH in both leagues? I'd have been like, nah, not really.
Yeah.
I understand. The game moves. Do you want to ban shifts? Not really. I understand. The game moves. Do I want a pitch clock? Never in my life. I understand. Times change. The game moves. So I still get the thing that I still get baseball. But it's not what it was in the 80s and 90s, and that's okay. I'm the opposite end here for this kickoff return thing. I just want kick returns. I'm willing to take whatever I have to take to keep the train on the tracks. And that's kind of my view with baseball. It's like, listen, man, I still want people to give a damn. I want my kids to be into it. If you need a pitch clock, no mound visits, no pickoff throws to do that, fine by me. I just want my son to want to look forward to Little League practice.
Real quick, I want to give you my rule that I would change.
Oh, please do.
One, I would get rid of the tush push. That's so stupid, and assisting all ball carriers is dumb. But this kind of goes to your same idea, just a different penalty. I love the college rule for pass interference, max 15 yards, because there's nothing I hate more, Danny, than so-and-so team gets the ball with 10 seconds left in the half, and they're going to throw a Hail Mary. And what does the announcers always say? Hope for a pass interference.
Yeah.
How is that offense? I need you to complete the pass. Like, if you pick up 15 yards because I grab you and it's whatever, that's fine. I'll give you that extra 15. But you picking up 45 yards because you underthrew a ball, like, especially with the prevalence of that now, where quarterbacks, how many times do they talk about you can't overthrow them, it's better to underthrow them because you can always turn it into a pass interference? What the heck is that? The whole goal is to hit them in stride to go for a touchdown, but so many quarterbacks now are like, let me underthrow it by 5 yards, let my receiver fight through it, and suddenly that play doesn't count for anything in our stats, but we picked up 40 yards because of a pass interference. I hate that. Make it a max of 15 like college, and suddenly you won't see that bomb strategy like you see all the time, too.
So on that, and 800-636-1067, there's something that's always driven me nuts, too. So let's say a throw is up in the air, a defender is beat, and he grabs the guy and, like, hauls him down. And let's say that ball wasn't a great throw and it wasn't, quote-unquote, catchable. And so they'll go uncatchable. I think it should still be a penalty. My point is, you can't haul somebody down when the ball's in the air. The defender didn't know it was uncatchable when he hauled him to the ground.
Yeah.
You don't just get a pass because the quarterback made a crappy throw because Anthony Richardson threw it 10 yards out of bounds. You can't haul people down. So that should be something. I've always thought that, too. 800-636-1067. Let's do another one of these. Give me your suggestions, guys. In or out on the stupid Philadelphia Eagles dumb play that's wildly effective. And rule that's got to change in the NFL with a couple rule changes on the table. This is Grant Danny here on The Fan.